Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into, it's a pretty heavy topic, but a crucial one, resisting tyranny. You guys sent in a ton of sources. We got Ibram X. Kendi's work on anti-racism, Timothy Snyder's warnings on tyranny. We even got a look at the strongman archetype by Ruth Ben-Ghai. We're going to try to pull out those key insights, and hopefully you walk away with a new perspective.
It's fascinating how these sources, they're all over the place, but they all kind of circle back to the idea of power, you know, how it's used, how it corrupts, and how we as citizens can stand up against it.
I think before we go any further, we need to define some of these key terms, you know, tyranny, autocracy. These words get thrown around a lot. What do they actually mean in the context of what we're talking about today?
Well, Snyder gives us this really chilling picture of tyranny. And he uses some historical examples. He talks about how German Jews, even after Hitler's rise, they didn't really believe he was a threat. They thought the institutions would protect them.
That's a crazy thought. Like, tyranny doesn't always announce itself.
Right.
It can just kind of creep in until it's too late.
Exactly. And Ben-Ghai builds on this by saying that while not all authoritarians, you know, they don't all use brute force to get power, they are masters of these kind of like veiled threats. And they often project this image of strength and masculinity, the strongman persona, to intimidate and cultivate fear.
So like Mussolini, Putin, those guys fit that mold.
Yes, exactly. And that brings us to autocracy. So Ben-Ghai defines that as the concentration of power in one person or a very small group, suppression of any dissent, and just a blatant disregard for the rule of law.
So it's like we're seeing history repeat itself right now. Understanding how autocracy worked in the past with guys like Mussolini, Pinochet, helps us see those same patterns today.
Totally. Yeah. It's like they're all using the same playbook. Authoritarians, they might be in totally different contexts, but their tactics are pretty much always the same. They exploit divisions in society. They undermine institutions. And then they use propaganda and disinformation to control the narrative.
Which is why it's so important for us to be aware of those tactics.
Right.
And how to counter them. Speaking of countering tyranny, one of the most valuable things I took away from Snyder's work was his list of 10 things citizens can do to resist tyranny.
Yeah, he gives this really practical guide for, you know, how to resist the erosion of freedom. And it's cool because some of his points are like super simple, like just making eye contact with your neighbors and making small talk. But in this climate of fear, it's like a powerful act of defiance.
Okay, so let's dive into that list. The first one is defend institutions. Mm. Snyder makes it clear these institutions like our courts, the free press, even our voting systems, they don't just run on their own. They need us to actively defend them.
Yeah. And I think we often take these institutions for granted and we just assume they'll always be there. But when you read Gessen's account of the Trump administration, it really shows you how quickly things can change, how quickly they can be weakened from the inside.
Like the appointment of Scott Pruitt to the EPA, someone who is very clearly against what the EPA stands for. That's a perfect example.
Yeah, putting loyalty above competence, a total classic autocratic tactic, you know. You basically cripple the very institutions that are supposed to be holding power accountable. And that leads us right into Snyder's second point, be informed. I feel like this is more important now than ever.
Absolutely. I mean, we're just bombarded with information all the time. It's hard to know what's true, what's propaganda, what to believe.
Right. And Snyder really urges us to be critical thinkers, you know, seek out reliable sources and don't just accept everything you see or hear from, you know, people in power.
Yeah, it's so easy to just scroll through social media and take everything at face value.
Yeah.
But we got to dig a little deeper. Think for ourselves.
Exactly. Like what Gessen describes with Trump, you know, always calling legitimate news fake news. It's textbook autocrat. You just sow distrust in the real sources of info. And then you fill the gap with your own narrative.
Which is why Snyder's third point, take responsibility, is so important. Mm. He's saying resisting tyranny, it's not a spectator sport. You got to get involved.
Yeah. It's a call to action for each of us. You know our actions. Even the small ones, they can make a difference. It's like Kendi's idea of being anti-racist, not just not racist. It's about actively fighting against it.
Right. It's about recognizing that we all have a part to play in creating a society that's just and fair. That's what it boils down to.
Totally. And that's where the individual and the collective come together.
Right.
We each have our own little sphere of influence, our own network. Where we can challenge bad ideas, speak out against injustice, and support people who are marginalized.
That's like weaving a web of resistance.
Okay.
A network of individuals who are dedicated to defending democratic values and holding power accountable.
Uh-huh.
Which ties in perfectly with Snyder's fourth point, maintain human connection. It might seem out of place, but in this climate of fear, just simple acts of kindness, of connection. They become really powerful.
Yeah. It's about building solidarity, a sense of community. When you have all this fear and division being pushed on people, just acknowledging each other's humanity, making eye contact, having a conversation, those little things, they become incredibly subversive.
It reminds us that resistance doesn't have to be this big dramatic thing. It can start with these everyday acts of connection and compassion. Okay, on to the fifth point. This one might sound a little ominous. Be wary of paramilitary groups. Snyder's pointing to a pattern in the rise of autocracy that we really need to be aware of.
Ben Guyot explores this too in her work on the strongman archetype. You know how fascist leaders like Mussolini use these paramilitary groups to intimidate their opponents and silence any dissent? They operate outside of the law. They use violence, intimidation. They're basically the strongman's muscle.
And we've seen echoes of this in recent years, haven't we? With the rise of extremist groups fueled by all this online misinformation and conspiracy theories, it's a real threat to democratic societies.
Yeah, for sure. And it's a reminder that the seeds of tyranny, they can be sown in these seemingly harmless places, like online forums. We got to be vigilant about identifying and calling out these dangerous ideologies before they take root and spread.
These groups are really good at exploiting divisions in society. They prey on people's fears and anxieties. They offer these simple solutions to complex problems.
Right. And that's why understanding their tactics, how they operate, being able to recognize their manipulations, that's so important.
Which leads us to Snyder's sixth point. Contribute to independent media. This one's close to home for us, of course. But it goes way beyond just supporting, you know, your favorite podcast or news outlet.
Totally. It's about recognizing how important a free and independent press is for holding power accountable. Ben Guyot's book is full of examples of how authoritarians, from Mussolini to Trump, targeted journalists and media outlets that dared to criticize them.
Trump's attacks on CNN are a perfect example, always calling them fake news, trying to discredit their reporting.
Yeah, it's a classic tactic and a dangerous one, because it really erodes public trust in reliable sources of information. And then you're left with this vacuum that's easily filled with propaganda and disinformation.
Exactly. Which is why supporting independent media is so vital. The outlets that are committed to investigative journalism, fact-checking, holding those in power accountable, regardless of their political affiliations.
Couldn't agree more. A healthy democracy needs a strong and independent press, no doubt about it.
Okay. Snyder's seventh point is, stand up to unjust laws. He says we have a moral obligation to challenge laws that violate fundamental rights and freedoms.
This really connects with Kendi's work on anti-racism, too. You know how he talks about how laws can be used as tools of oppression, designed to marginalize certain groups and keep the existing power structures in place?
Kendi saw this firsthand with racist policies in education. You know, they limited opportunities for Black students and just perpetuated inequality.
Right. It's a call to action. He's saying don't just sit back and accept unjust laws. Challenge them. Use your voice. Take action. And fight for change.
Don't be complicit. Silence in the face of injustice is basically enabling it.
Right.
Okay. Number eight on the list, support those targeted by the regime. This feels especially relevant today with all the intolerance and hate speech directed at certain groups.
Absolutely. Gessen's account of how Trump attacked John Lewis, a civil rights icon, and the Squad, those progressive congresswomen of color. It shows you how quickly people who challenge the status quo can become targets.
It's a reminder that those in power, they'll often try to silence dissenting voices, especially those from marginalized communities, the ones who threaten the existing power structure.
It's about standing up for the vulnerable, the people who are being silenced and marginalized. An attack on one group is an attack on all of us. We have to stand together.
Which brings us to Snyder's ninth point. Be mindful of language. Gessen talks about how the degradation of language is a key part of the autocrat's playbook.
Yeah. She talks about how Trump, with his constant lies, his misuse of language, how he just throw around words like tremendous and fake news with no real meaning. It was like he was trying to destabilize truth itself.
Yeah. It's like he was creating his own reality where words don't mean anything. And truth is whatever he says it is.
Right. And his overuse of these superlatives. And then you combine that with him completely ignoring facts. It's like he created this environment where you couldn't even have a real conversation about politics.
It was a way to undermine our shared understanding of reality, make people doubt what they see and hear.
Classic authoritarian tactic. Create chaos and confusion. And then it's easier to grab power and manipulate public opinion.
Which is why being mindful of the language we use, the information we consume, the sources we trust, that's more important than ever. We got to be critical thinkers, be able to tell fact from fiction, and spot when someone's trying to manipulate us through language.
Absolutely. And that takes us to Snyder's last point, and maybe the most important one. Remember that politics is about hope. It's so easy to become cynical and despairing, when you're faced with all this stuff.
Especially with all the negative news and images of division and conflict we see every day. It can feel like the world's falling apart. But Snyder reminds us that ultimately, the fight for a just society is a fight for a better future.
And that future is something worth fighting for, no matter how hard it gets.
Gessen makes a similar point. She talks about the importance of a shared vision, a story that we can all believe in, that inspires us to work towards a better world.
Right, like Langston Hughes's poem, "Let America Be America Again." That's a great example of that kind of hopeful vision.
It reminds us that even when things seem dark, hope can be a powerful force for change. And that belief in the possibility of a better future, that's what sustains us in the fight against tyranny. So we've talked about the tactics of tyranny and how we can resist them. But to really understand the scale of the threat, we need to look at some concrete examples of how these autocratic tendencies have played out, in recent history.
Yeah, you're right. When you look at Trump's early presidency through the lens of what Gessen and Ben Gyat have written, it's pretty disturbing how familiar it all seems.
So let's get into it. 10 examples of Trump's autocratic leanings, 2016. And we'll start with this one, Cabinet of Anti-Experts. It's kind of mind-blowing when you think about it.
It's a really blatant example of how Trump intentionally weakened institutions by putting people in charge who are opposed to their very missions, like Scott Cruitt at the EPA. Betsy DeVos in education. It was a clear sign that he didn't care about expertise or experience.
It was all about loyalty,
Right.
putting loyalists in positions of power, even if they were completely unqualified. And Gessen's account of what happened to the EPA under Pruitt really shows how damaging that can be.
Yeah, that's a classic autocratic move. You cripple the institutions that are supposed to hold you accountable. And that leads us to the second example on our list, attacks on the media. We've touched on this a little bit already, but it's worth emphasizing just how relentless Trump's attacks on the press were.
He was constantly bashing legitimate news outlets, calling them fake news, trying to discredit journalists. He even called the media the enemy of the people.
It's straight out of the autocrat's playbook. You silence dissent, you control the narrative, and you create a climate of fear and distrust. It's a really dangerous tactic.
Absolutely. Because when you undermine trust in the free press, you're basically chipping away at the foundation of a healthy democracy. If we can't trust the media to report the truth, then who can we trust?
Exactly. And without a free press, who's going to hold the powerful accountable? Okay, so the third example on our list is erosion of norms and language. Gessen does a really good job of explaining how Trump's constant lying and his misuse of language had this kind of destabilizing effect on truth and reality.
It was like he was creating his own alternate reality where words didn't mean anything and truth was whatever he said it was.
Right. He would just throw around these superlatives like tremendous and amazing, but he had zero regard for facts or evidence. It made it almost impossible to have a real conversation about anything.
It was a deliberate attempt to make people question their own perceptions of reality, make them doubt what they were seeing and hearing.
Yep. Another classic autocratic tactic. Create chaos and confusion, and then it's easier to manipulate people and grab power.
Which is why being careful about the language we use and the information we consume is so important. We can't just blindly accept everything we hear. We have to think critically and be able to spot these attempts to manipulate us.
Totally. Okay, so number four on the list, obsession with loyalty over expertise. This one's kind of related to the cabinet of anti-experts, but it goes beyond just personnel decisions. It's about creating a culture where loyalty to the leader trumps everything else.
And we saw that play out over and over again in the Trump administration. People were afraid to contradict him, or they just went along with his lies and distortions because they were afraid of what would happen if they didn't.
Yeah. It creates this toxic environment where bad decisions get made, and anyone who disagrees is silenced, and that never ends well.
Okay, number five, normalization of cruelty. This one's really disturbing because it gets at a deeper kind of moral decay.
Ben Yuet talks about this in her book, how strong men often project this image of ruthlessness and aggression. They use violence and intimidation to stay in control, and they want to make it seem normal, acceptable.
Like when Trump praised Eddie Gallagher, the Navy SEAL who was convicted of war crimes. That was a really disturbing example of this.
Yeah, it's about desensitizing people to violence, making it seem like it's no big deal. And once you start down that path, it gets easier and easier to justify more and more extreme acts of cruelty.
And then there's embrace of white supremacy. This is something we really can't ignore when we're talking about Trump.
Definitely. From his very fine people on both sides, comment after Charlottesville to his attacks on John Lewis and the squad, it's a clear pattern of aligning himself with white supremacist ideology.
And it's not just rhetoric either. His policies like the Muslim travel ban and the family separations at the border, they reflect this xenophobic and racist worldview.
Yeah. It's about exploiting racial tensions and appealing to a white nationalist base. It's a tactic that autocrats have used throughout history to consolidate their power.
And that leads us to number 7 on the list, xenophobic rhetoric and policies. Trump was really good at using fear and scapegoating to solidify his base.
He was constantly demonizing immigrants, saying they were criminals and rapists. And his policies were all about restricting immigration and asylum. It was all part of this us versus them narrative.
It was about pitting Americans against foreigners, using fear and resentment to get people riled up and on his side.
And it had real consequences for the people who were targeted by these policies, the families that were separated at the border, the asylum seekers who were detained in these horrible conditions. It was inhumane.
Okay, moving on to number 8, undermining democratic processes. This one really gets to the heart of the problem because it's about attacking the system itself.
Trump started claiming the election was rigged even before the 2016 election happened, and then he tried to obstruct the investigations into Russian interference. It was all about sowing distrust in the democratic process.
Yeah. He wanted to create this narrative that the only way he could lose was if the election was stolen. And that laid the groundwork for what happened after the 2020 election when he tried to overturn the results. It was a direct attack on American democracy.
Absolutely. Number 9 on our list is conflicts of interest and corruption. Gessen's book is full of examples of how Trump used his position to enrich himself and his family.
His cabinet was full of people with conflicts of interest. And Trump himself continued to profit from his businesses even while he was president. It was clear that he didn't think the rules applied to him.
It just shows this total disregard for ethics. And it erodes public trust. It makes people think the system is rigged in favor of the rich and powerful.
Okay, last one. Disregard for the rule of law. This one kind of sums up a lot of what we've been talking about.
Trump was constantly trying to find ways to get around the law, like when he tried to pardon himself or when he pressured law enforcement to drop investigations. It was clear that he thought he was above the law.
He didn't think the rules applied to him. And that's really dangerous because once you start down that path, it's easy to justify all sorts of abuses of power.
It's the hallmark of an autocrat. They think they're the only ones who get to decide what's right and wrong, and they don't care about the laws or the institutions that are supposed to hold them in check.
It's a lot to process, right? I mean, seeing these patterns repeat themselves throughout history, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, it's easy to feel helpless, but that's what they want you to feel. Autocrats, they want you to be apathetic and disengaged. That's how they win. That's why it's so important to remember what Snyder says about resisting tyranny. Those 10 things, those aren't just nice ideas. There are things we can actually do, starting right now.
Yeah, you're right. We can't just sit around and complain. We got to take responsibility, get informed, and actually do something. We have more power than we think.
Totally. And it doesn't have to be these huge dramatic gestures either. Sometimes the most powerful acts of resistance are the small, everyday things. Like Snyder's point about making eye contact and talking to your neighbors. In a world where everyone's so isolated and stuck in their own little bubbles, those little acts of connection, they can really make a difference.
Yeah. They break down those walls of fear and distrust that autocrats use to control people. It's a reminder that we're not alone in this.
Exactly. And then you connect those individual actions to a bigger vision, like what Kendi says about being anti-racist. It's not enough to just not be racist. You got to actively fight against racism, challenge it wherever you see it.
Right. We can't just be passive. We got to be active participants in creating the kind of world we want to live in.
And that's where hope comes in. Remember Snyder's last point. Politics is about hope. It's easy to get cynical, but we can't lose hope. We have to believe that things can get better.
Hope for a better future, where everyone has a chance to thrive, and hope that our actions, no matter how small, can actually make a difference.
And Gessen talks about this too, the importance of having a shared vision, a story that we can all believe in, that inspires us to work together for a better world.
Like Langston Hughes's poem, Let America Be America Again.
Yeah.
That's a really powerful example of that kind of hopeful vision.
Yeah. It reminds us that the fight for justice and equality, it's a relay race. Each generation passes the torch to the next. We're all part of something bigger than ourselves.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into resisting tyranny, we want to leave you with this question. What are you doing today to stand on the side of freedom? What small act of resistance can you commit to? Because this fight for democracy, it's a marathon, not a sprint. and it's going to take all of us working together to win it.